The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, let's get right into football. We had Thursday night football last night. Carolina Panthers versus the Atlanta Falcons. And the Panthers pretty much just took care of business last night. They won 25-15. Their defense, man, their defense has really not been a huge issue this year. The secondary has kind of had its issues, but mostly due to injury. But that front seven has just been something else. And that's been probably the most consistent thing about the Panthers all season long. And I mean, they've had a pretty bad season, but that front seven has been something else. And so they were able to just, you know, Marcus Mariota, he's not that great of a quarterback, and he looked like one of the worst quarterbacks in the league last night. Although I'll say P.J. Walker didn't look that good either. He was actually lucky that it was a very rainy game yesterday in Carolina because of the hurricane that's passing through. So it was pretty much just a downpour the whole way through. But P.J. Walker's lucky that it was a downpour because he threw a couple of passes that should have been interceptions. And really the only reason why they weren't interceptions is because of how slippery the ball was. And the defender just wasn't really able to hold on. Now, granted, P.J. Walker didn't have that bad of a game, but it was really just all about Deontay Foreman for the Panthers at running back. This guy is just killing it, and good for him because he is an ex-Longhorn, so hook 'em horns, motherfucker. I always root for ex-Longhorns, like to see where they're going in life. And, you know, he got drafted and just kind of petered out. But then he went to he signed with the Titans last year, and he was running behind Derrick Henry, and he actually took over for Derrick Henry after he had suffered his injury, and he really had a solid year last year, and then he was signed by the Panthers this year. He was backing up Christian McCaffrey, and now he's really actually been solid for them from start to finish, and he had 130 yards last night and a touchdown, and really was just the main reason why the offense was able to get into scoring position or score in certain areas. So they just the Panthers really just dominated the Atlanta Falcons really on every level last night. So they made up for that loss a couple of weeks ago. All right, and so let's get into the rest of the games for Week 10 this weekend, beginning with the Seattle Seahawks at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But this game will not be in Tampa Bay. It will be the first time ever that the NFL will be playing a game in Germany. They will be in Munich, Germany, before I get into the game, I just got to say. So, of course, with all my sports fandom, I'm always watching sports shows or listening to sports talk throughout the entire week. And usually my mainstay show every morning is Good Morning Football on NFL Network. And they were in London, of course, a few weeks ago when the games began in London. So they were there. And there is a huge difference, and because this week they're in Germany, and there's just a huge difference between the fandom in Germany and the fandom in London. It kind of feels like London people don't really give that much of a fuck, whereas in Germany, these motherfuckers, man, like, they're getting huge-ass crowds just for this morning talk show, and it's just cool to see how they're interacting, and it's not just American fans. Like, these are straight-up German fans who are excited about our game, so I kind of feel like the NFL has been missing out, and instead of, like, making London a mainstay, they should make Germany a mainstay, because these motherfuckers are all about NFL football. And, like, it's crazy, too, because, like, when they go to London, you see a lot of different fans. It's not usually the two teams who are playing. You will sometimes see, like, of course, when the Packers played in London, there were a lot of Packers fans, just because Packers fans, they travel heavy because they're a historic team, so they do have a lot of fans. But in Germany, there are a lot of Seahawks fans. Like, it is insane to see how many Seahawks fans who are not only traveling from Seattle, but straight up from Germany wearing them. And also, they love Tom Brady over there too. So they're getting a treat this weekend between the Seahawks and Tampa Bay. But I just got to say, man, I'm really appreciating seeing what these Germans just feel about the NFL, because you could just feel it even in watching the morning shows. And, you know, Germany's a place I've never visited before, but would love to visit. And watching the vibe of how they are towards our sport makes me want to go to Germany that much more. So have always wanted to travel to Germany, and now I really want to fucking travel to Germany. So let's get into the game, though. So Tampa is favored by a 1.5 right now. And, Seattle's coming in hot. I hope Tampa is not overlooking Seattle. I doubt they are, because they don't seem like that type of team, especially with Tom Brady as your quarterback. He knows you should never overlook anybody. And especially with the way Tampa's playing. But I feel like Tampa winning the way they won last weekend is going to spark them into getting some more of these wins in the second half of the season. And Seattle, while I think they're a pretty solid team and they're playing great football right now, I cannot discredit anything that they're doing. I feel like they're going to start to falter at some point, and I feel like this is going to be the beginning of it. I know I said that last week, but I feel like this is where it's going to be at this week. I do expect it to be a close game. I do expect it to be a good game. I wouldn't be shocked if it's just one of those things where Tom Brady gets the ball in his hands on the last drive and just drives it down the field and does what he did last week. And that's kind of what I'm expecting to see this week. And I've got Tampa Bay winning the first ever game in Germany, 24-17. Now, to the games over here in the States, the morning games, we have the Minnesota Vikings at the Buffalo Bills. Right now, the Bills are a 9.5-point favorite. Both of these teams are coming into this game hot. They're both playing great football. Even though the Bills are coming off of a loss last week, they're still one of the best teams in the league. The Vikings, they've just been playing lights out as well. But this, I just kind of see being one of those games where I just think Buffalo's the better team. I think Minnesota's going to Buffalo. They're just kind of due for a loss. You know, Minnesota really hasn't had a very impressive win yet against a really good team. And I just don't really see it coming this week, whereas I just see Buffalo stepping it up defensively and offensively, of course, and I think Buffalo's going to get the win. It's not going to be a runaway, though. I think it's going to be a close game, but I just actually kind of have a feeling this is going to be that Kirk Cousins game where he just has all the follies and is throwing interceptions in the red zone and just really not having an overall good game and him costing his team this win, and I think Buffalo's going to get the win 28-21. Then we have the Detroit Lions at the Chicago Bears. This is a game where it's two shitty teams. Right now, the Bears are actually a 2.5-point favorite. But it's just two shitty teams going at each other. Now, offensively, especially the Bears, they've kind of had opposite seasons, where Detroit started off the season offensively great, man. They were scoring like no other, and then now they could barely... they're lucky if they can find a way to score. Whereas the Bears started off the season as the worst team in the offensively in the league. And now they're really putting it together. And Justin Fields, he's really becoming very difficult for defenses to stop as well. It's going to be interesting. I really am hoping that the Bears don't waste him. This offseason, if they can, they need to go after some great offensive linemen and get him some receivers. Getting Chase Claypool was only the beginning, in my opinion. They need to go after whoever the fuck is available this offseason, whether it be through free agency or through the draft. They need to go get, like, the best receiver in the game, because Justin Fields is going to be, I feel like, similar to Lamar Jackson, where he's just going to be such a threat. If he just even has a halfway decent offensive line, look out for Justin Fields. This week, and I feel like it's going to be another week offensively for Chicago. As a matter of fact, I feel like this is going to be a breakout game for Chase Claypool. And I think Chicago's just going to have a very solid game. Detroit, I think, is not going to get run over, but I kind of have a feeling it's going to be one of those games where it starts out close in the first half, and then Chicago just starts to run away with it. In the second half, I have Chicago winning this game 30-20. Then we've got the Denver Broncos at the Tennessee Titans. Right now, the Titans are a 2.5-point favorite. I just kind of feel like Denver, they haven't been able to get it going offensively. I don't think that they're going to find some magic formula right now to get it going offensively, whereas the Titans have Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry has shown he ain't feeling no effects of that injury from last season. He's taken over back to where he left off last year, and he is just running motherfuckers over, and that's really what I'm expecting in this game. I feel like the Titans are going to win a close one, 20-14. Then the Jacksonville Jaguars are at the Kansas City Chiefs. Right now, the Chiefs are a 9.5-point favorite. While I feel like the Jaguars are a much improved team, I don't feel like they're on the Chiefs level in any way, shape, or form. I feel like Patrick Mahomes is on fire. The Chiefs, while they got by last week, but I mean, the Titans have always been an issue for them over the years, at least. And the Jaguars have not. So I feel like this is going to be the blowout of the week. The Chiefs get the win 41-17. Then the Cleveland Browns are at the Miami Dolphins. The Dolphins are a 4.5-point favorite. The Browns, to me, are just such a weird team. They have no identity. They just haven't been able to get it going. Other than Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb is having a phenomenal season. I kind of feel like if you just keep going to him, you're not going to really have any issues. Defensively, they're not bad either, but they just really are, they just don't have an identity. And I feel like this is one of those games where they're going to kind of walk into it, and Miami's probably going to roll right over them, you know. Miami offensively is just right. They're just tops in the league right now. Tyreek Hill, Waddle, and Tua are just having a great time right now. Mostert's really starting to become the focal point at running back. And I just feel like Miami's going to roll in this one 27-10. Then the Houston Texans are at the New York Giants. Right now, the Giants are a 6.5-point favorite. Basically, the Texans flat out suck. There is nothing good to say about this team. They do have a slight amount of fight in them, but they're just an awful, terrible team. Whereas the Giants, I don't believe in them. I feel like their record is better than what they actually are. But, I mean, they're playing the Texans. The Texans are trash. I feel like the Giants are going to get this one easily, 23-7. And then what I feel like is going to be the ugly game of the week is the New Orleans Saints at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Right now, the Saints are a 2.5-point favorite, which I think is very odd because I feel like both of these teams are pretty equal in shittiness. The Saints, they still have Andy Dalton starting at quarterback, but it's like, is Jameis Winston going to be thrown in at some point? Because really, I don't think it really matters. I mean, the offensive line is horrible. But it's just really odd what you're seeing from the Saints on the field. Defensively, they're not that good either, even though I feel like they're a good defense. I feel like they're on the field too much, so the offense isn't backing them up that much, so just teams are able to score on them. The Steelers are also awful. Offensively, they're awful. They do get TJ Watt back this week, and I just kind of feel like this is going to be that really ugly game where it's just like a couple of field goals here and there, and then there might be a touchdown scored, and it's going to be one of those like weird touchdowns where it's like a blocked punt for a touchdown or a defensive play for a touchdown, something like that. But I do think the Steelers are going to get the win, mostly just because they're at home. They're coming off of a bye week. They get TJ Watt back this week. So I've got Pittsburgh winning the ugly game of the week, 16-10. Then the afternoon games, we have the Indianapolis Colts at the Las Vegas Raiders. Right now, the Raiders are a 5.5-point favorite. Really, both of these teams are basically in the same boat. You have no idea what you're going to get from either one of them. Right now, the Raiders are coming off of a pretty decent win, they are at home. I feel like they have to have a game where they're just really going to dominate, and I kind of feel like that's going to be this game because the Colts are even in more disarray than the Raiders are. At least the Raiders, their excuse is, hey, this is their first season under Josh McDaniels as their coach. You really can't expect a team to be that great and not have growing pains when you have a new coach. Whereas the Colts, yes, they have a new coach, but he just was hired this week and he has no coaching experience at all. This team is in complete and utter disarray. So I believe in the Raiders. a slight bit more than I do the Colts. And I really have a feeling this is going to be a really good game for the Raiders. And I just see them really going off offensively and just really having a good, solid game that they've needed all season. And I feel like the Raiders are going to get the win 27-17. Then we have my Dallas Cowboys at the Green Bay Packers. Right now, the Cowboys are a 4.5-point favorite. I mean, I guess it's not really shocking how bad the Packers have been this season. They are on a 4-game losing streak, and the Cowboys they're looking really solid, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They lead the league in sacks right now. They're getting some turnovers. Micah Parsons is just a beast and is a factor on basically every single defensive play on the field. Offensively, the Cowboys are playing a great balanced attack. Dak had a really solid game last week against the, or 2 weeks ago against the Bears. They did get the bye this week, so they're coming off of a bye week. Mike McCarthy's coming back to Green Bay where he used to coach. And the Packers are just reeling right now. You know, they don't have anything going on offensively. They don't really have much going on defensively. So I actually feel like the Cowboys are going to come in here and roll. Now, I hope the Cowboys don't overlook them. Aaron Rodgers, over the years, actually has owned the Cowboys. Other than recent history, recently the Cowboys actually have been the better team. And I do think that's the case this week. And I actually think the Cowboys are going to roll over the Packers 28-13. Then the last game of the afternoon is the Arizona Cardinals at the Los Angeles Rams. Right now, the Rams are a 3.5-point favorite. And this is really weird this week because both quarterbacks on both teams, there's a possibility they may not play. Matt Stafford is actually in the concussion protocol. So, you know, that just really depends on what happens there. And then Kyler Murray, he just practiced yesterday, actually. He has a hamstring injury. So there's actually questions on whether or not either one of these quarterbacks will be playing in this game. With that being said, both teams are playing like shit. So I kind of have a feeling that's going to make this a pretty decent game. I think it's going to be a very close game. Since it's in LA, I'm leaning more towards the Rams. Plus, I just think they are more cohesive. They know each other better, whereas the Cardinals are in such disarray. They're just yelling at each other all the fucking time on the sidelines. You could just tell they don't really work well as a team. And you can't really tell if that's the coaching staff or the Kyler Murray or a combination of everything. But I've got the Rams winning a close one, 21-17. And then the Sunday night football game is the Los Angeles Chargers at the San Francisco 49ers. Right now, the 49ers are a 6.5-point favorite. And with the Chargers, you just really don't know what you're going to get from them. And that's just typical Chargers football. They do have a very good team, and you really want to like look at them and be like, oh, I finally believe in the Chargers, but I don't believe in the Chargers, and until they give me something to believe in, I can't believe in them. Whereas the Niners, defensively, they have it all going on. They have Christian McCaffrey, who's looking like he's fitting right in with their offense. You have Deebo Samuel, who is one of the most versatile wide receivers in the league. And then you also have George Kittle, who really hasn't had that takeover game of his just yet. So that could be this week. You never know. But they have so many good players at so many positions that I just can't pick against the 49ers. So I have the 49ers winning this one 30-21. Then we also have a great, great weekend for the UFC this weekend. We have UFC 281 with three excellent fights. Two of them, of course, are the co-main events, beginning with Israel Adesanya, who is 23-1, versus Alex Pereira, who is 6-1. Now, these two know each other very well, actually. They are both killers in the kickboxing arena. That's where they both started. And actually, Alex Pereira owns Israel Adesanya. As a matter of fact, that was one of the best kickboxing fights, and Pereira knocked Adesanya out. So these two know each other already. And Adesanya, now he is just, I love watching him fight. And it's crazy too, because it doesn't look like when he knocks a motherfucker out, it doesn't look like he hits you that hard, but he will knock a motherfucker out. So will Pereira though. Pereira's 6-1 record, every one of his fights except for one has been a knockout. So this guy, he is a knockout king. That's what he was known for in kickboxing, as being the knockout king, as is Adesanya. And, you know, both of them are coming in hot, but with the way UFC has gone this year, While I would lean towards Adesanya in this one, I actually think Pereira is going to get this win. Pereira is coming in hot. He is on a 6-game winning streak right now. And I just think he's ready to go. He's the new guy. He has beat Adesanya before. And basically every champ this year in UFC has pretty much lost. And that's really been the theme of the season. At least for this year, it's been. And so I have a feeling Alex Pereira is going to pull the upset this weekend and beat Israel Adesanya with a knockout. Yes, I think he's going to knock him out. Whoever wins this is getting the knockout. There is bad blood between these two just because they know each other through kickboxing. And Adesanya, he is one of those shit talkers. In a good way. And so he has been talking a lot of shit this week, whereas Pereira has been more quiet about it. That is kind of who he is. He is a little bit more quiet, but don't count either of these guys out. I feel like whoever wins, it is going to be a knockout. But I have Pereira getting the win. Then the co-main event is Carla Esparza, who's coming in with a 20-6 record. And she's coming off of a big win. She beat Rose Namajunas in her last fight. And then we've got, she's fighting Zhang Weili, who is coming in with a 22-3 record. And Zhang Weili is one of the best fucking fighters in UFC. She had a 20 or 21 fight winning streak. And which was halted by Rose Namajunas, who just lost to Carla Esparza. So this is a big fight for both fighters, because one actually lost to Namajunas. Actually, Zhang has lost to Namajunas twice, whereas Esparza got the win against Namajunas just a few months ago. So both fighters are really good fighters, but Zhang Weili is nuts. She is one of the craziest fucking fighters you will ever watch. I love watching her fights. One of my favorite moves that she is just known for is she just knee kicks the fuck out of your face. She just boom, 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 boom. It's so much fun to watch. And she pretty much does it every single one of her fights. As a matter of fact, she's a fighter that I've pretty much watched for most of the time that, like... For UFC, I would say I've been an avid fan definitely since 2020, because that was the only thing on TV for a while, the only sport post-COVID, you know, because that was it for a minute. So I really clung on to UFC then, but I'd actually started watching UFC a couple years before that, mainly like the main events, or I'd catch fights here and there. But Zhang Weili, I always remember her. She's nuts in the ring. I love watching her fight, and I think she's going to beat Carla Esparza. I respect Esparza, especially, you know, she's beat some really good fighters throughout her time, but I just kind of feel like Zhang Weili is going to come in, and I just think she's the better fighter. I think she's a little bit faster on her feet, and I feel like Zhang Weili is going to get the knockout in this one. And then the third fight that we have this weekend, I just feel like it's going to be, it's just too great fighters. I'm leaning towards Poirier in this one. It's Dustin Poirier, who's got a 28-7 record, versus Michael Chandler with the 23-7 record. So they're both pretty much the same fighter, and they're just both powerhouse fighters. I love watching both of them fight. I'm leaning towards Poirier in this one, but you cannot count out Chandler. That guy he's a beast too. So this is going to be a fun one to watch as well. And then we had a little bit of baseball news this week, because, you know, now that baseball season's over, all of the postseason awards are going to be announced, and we had all the Silver Slugger Award winners announced this week. So let's get right into that. At catcher in the American League, Alejandro Kirk for the Blue Jays, he won his first Silver Slugger Award this year. Then over in the National League, it went to JT Realmuto with the Philadelphia Phillies. That is his third. Then at first base in the American League, Nate Lowe with the Texas Rangers won his first Silver Slugger Award. He beat out Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Jose Abreu and Anthony Rizzo. That says a lot right there. So congratulations to him. And over in the National League, Paul Goldschmidt, he won it for the St. Louis Cardinals. That is his fifth, and very well deserved, because Paul Goldschmidt had a spectacular season. And that also ties him for Albert Pujols and Todd Helton for the most ever wins by a first baseman. for the Silver Slugger Award winner. So congratulations to him. And at second base in the American League, Jose Altuve of the Houston Astros won his sixth Silver Slugger Award winner. In the National League, it was Jeff McNeil for the New York Mets. He won his first. Then at shortstop in the American League, it was Xander Bogaerts of the Boston Red Sox who won his fifth. In the National League, it was Trey Turner of the Los Angeles Dodgers who won his first. Then at third base in the American League, Jose Ramirez of the Cleveland Guardians won his fourth Silver Slugger Award winner award. And then in the National League, it was Nolan Arenado of the St. Louis Cardinals who won his fifth. Then turning to the outfield in the American League, it was, of course, Aaron Judge of the New York Yankees who won his fourth Silver Slugger Award. And that's absolutely a deserved since he is the home run king of the year. And then in the National League, it was Mookie Betts of the Los Angeles Dodgers. He won his fifth. And then we had at the designated hitter spot, American League, Yordan Alvarez of the Houston Astros won his first Silver Slugger Award. And then in the National League, it was Josh Bell of the Washington Nationals / San Diego Padres. He also won his first Silver Slugger Award. And then at the utility position in the American League, it was Luis Arias of the Minnesota Twins. He won his first. And then in the National League, it was Brandon Drury of the Cincinnati Reds / San Diego Padres. He also won his first Silver Slugger Award. And since today's episode is episode number 88, as you know, I'm a huge Dallas Cowboys fan. And the number 88 is very synonymous with the team because we have had four, I would say, very definitely two of them are legendary. One of them probably, I wouldn't say legendary, but he had a spectacular career. One is well on his way, and then it was a reach to find a fifth, but I am doing the Trop 5 88 Club today because the number 88 is, like I said, it's synonymous with the Dallas Cowboys. We have had some great players don the number 88. You basically have to be invited into the 88 Club. So I decided since today is episode 88, I'm going to go ahead and do the Trop 5 Dallas Cowboys 88 Club. And like I said, it was a reach on the fifth one. The top four was very easy. The top two was kind of difficult, but number one is pretty inarguable in my position, especially or in my opinion, just because statistically, and you know, there's once I get there, the explanation. You should have your number one be the same as my number one, in my opinion. Other than nostalgia, I guess you could say, or we'll get there when we get there. But anyways, so let's get to the Trop 5 Dallas Cowboys 88 Club, beginning with number 5, Antonio Bryant. He was wide receiver for the Dallas Cowboys from 2002 to 2004, so it wasn't a long tenure with the Dallas Cowboys, but really, that was because of Bill Parcells. Now, Bill Parcells did draft him. He was a second-round draft pick. In his rookie season, this is why I put him on this list, in his rookie season, he had 44 receptions for 733 yards and 6 touchdowns. All of these were, rookie records at the time, either in first or second. So he did have a phenomenal rookie season. He actually, his couple of years with the Cowboys were very good and very promising. I just feel like Bill Parcells started to slight him a bit, and they just didn't see eye to eye on things. And then eventually the Cowboys would eventually get rid of him. Unfortunately, because I think he would have gone on to have at least a decent career with the Cowboys. But really what happened is because Bill Parcells, while I credit him for some of the draft picks he made, I feel like Bill Parcells was one of the worst fucking coaches the Cowboys ever had because he was a fucking asshole who just abandoned us. And he just relied way too much on these old fucking players from his old days when we signed Vinny Testaverde, who was like 955 years old. And then we signed the Statue of Liberty, Drew Bledsoe, who was way past his prime, who would never move and get sacked forever. forever and for always. And then what he did at the receiver position. We signed Terry Glenn, and I liked Terry Glenn and Keyshawn Johnson. They both played well for us, but he put too much on them. And I feel like we could have gone with Antonio Bryant as like our number one, and he could have flourished. But basically the two of them didn't see eye to eye. And Antonio Bryant's career basically careened off course after that. But I feel like he had a couple of good seasons with the Cowboys, and I liked what I saw from him. And so he was able to crack the top five. But we all know he came nowhere near the top four, because the top four are all the damn good 88. So at number four on my top five Dallas Cowboys in the 88 club is CD Lamb. And the reason why he could easily move up, because obviously he's the only current one playing. So there's so much potential for CD Lamb, who was drafted in 2020. So he's only in his second season or third season with the Cowboys. He was a first round pick. So far he's had 195 receptions, 2,593 yards and 16 touchdowns. So he could obviously build off of that. I really like what I've seen from him. He could work on the dropped passes. That's pretty much his only issue he has. But other than that, I feel like he could definitely move up ahead of number three, but it's going to take a lot, especially a Super Bowl ring, for him to get up anywhere near the status of one and two on my list. But CD Lamb, he's definitely got a lot of potential. I feel like he can definitely work his way up, and he's definitely a great member of the 88 club for the wide receivers of the Dallas Cowboys, legendary wide receivers. But he's got a lot to work up to, especially at number three on my top five Dallas Cowboys in the 88 club. And that is Dez Bryant, who played for the Cowboys from 2010 to 2017. He was also a first-round pick. The funny thing is, like CD Lamb, the both of them came from CD Lamb was from Oklahoma. Dez Bryant was from Oklahoma State. CeeDee Lamb came from Oklahoma. I was about to say they both came from Oklahoma State. No, CeeDee Lamb came from stupid-ass Oklahoma. They both played for Oklahoma teams. Almost just said they both played for OK State. Nah, that's not true. Dez Bryant played for OK State. CeeDee Lamb played for Oklahoma. Boo to both of them. Except for when they're in Cowboys uniforms, of course. But Dez Bryant, he was a first-round pick. His career numbers with the Cowboys, or actually his career numbers overall, are 537 receptions for 7,506 receiving yards and 75 touchdowns. He was he always threw up the X because he was always an X factor. He made so many great plays. I loved watching his career. He was so much fun to watch. It actually kind of sucks because his career with the Cowboys basically came to an end because he was, quote, not a Jason Garrett guy. And Jason Garrett was our coach, and I guess maybe he didn't like Dez Bryant for whatever reason. But I loved Dez Bryant. I actually have a Dez Bryant jersey. He's actually the only number 88 right now in my out of the 88 club that I own. I own a Dez Bryant jersey, still wear the Dez Bryant jersey. And I really enjoyed his career. He made so many fun plays. He had so many plays where he made like toe drag swags. And he made so many crazy plays. And he was such a fun Cowboy to watch. It sucks he never got to win a Super Bowl. As a matter of fact, he, of course, was involved in one of the crappiest plays of all time. If you're a Cowboys fan, the divisional round matchup between the Cowboys and the Packers, where on instant replay, you know, Dez, if you look at it, he caught the ball. It would have set the Cowboys up in scoring position, and they more than likely would have gone on to win that game and go to play the Seattle Seahawks in the NFC Championship that year. But unfortunately, what ended up happening is on replay, it would get overturned, and the Cowboys would go on to lose and never win a playoff game with Dez Bryant. Well, they would win a couple playoff games, but none that mattered. And they would definitely not go on to win any Super Bowls. But overall, I enjoyed Dez Bryant's career. He was a great Cowboy, in my opinion. Then at the top two number 88s for the Dallas Cowboys, it was hard to do, because, you know, it's either going to be Drew Pearson or Michael Irvin at number one, because those are obviously easily the two best number 88s. You can make arguments for both of them being number one, but my favoritism plus statistics just swayed me at number one. So my number two is Drew Pearson. He played for the Cowboys at wide receiver from 1973 to 1983. He was actually an undrafted free agent. That says a lot, too, because at this time in the 70s, the draft actually used to be something like, I believe, 16 rounds. It was crazy. It was like 12 or 16 rounds. It was a big-ass draft. So to be an undrafted free agent means you were the bottom of the barrel. Basically, Drew Pearson, nobody believed in him at all. The Cowboys really kind of signed him just to see what they had in him. And then Drew Pearson just worked his way up and became the guy. He became Roger Staubach's go-to guy. As a matter of fact, he is involved in one of the most historic plays of all time, the Hail Mary, between the Dallas Cowboys and the Minnesota Vikings. Roger Staubach just throws up a Hail Mary pass to Drew Pearson. He just makes a beautiful catch, runs it in the end zone for a touchdown, and the Cowboys win. And that's basically where the term Hail Mary came from, was that game. So Drew Pearson was on the receiving end of the Hail Mary. As a matter of fact, he just finally got inducted into the Hall of Fame after many, many, many disrespectful years of not being inducted into the Hall of Fame, but he finally just got in this year. So congratulations to you, Drew Pearson. He has a career, he has career receptions of 489, career 7,822 receiving yards and 48 touchdowns for career. And then he also won Super Bowl 12, and he's a three-time first team All-Pro. So how about that from an undrafted free agent and just one of the greatest legendary Cowboys of all time? And he was the beginning of the 88 club. So that's why most people would put him at number one. But you know, my number one had to be the playmaker, Michael Irvin. One of my favorite Cowboys of all time. He played for the Cowboys from 1988 to 1999. So that kind of gives him even more credence as to being the number one in the 88 club, because he was drafted in 1988. Hello? He was a first-round pick. He had 750 career receptions, 11,904 career yards, and 65 career touchdowns. He is a three-time Super Bowl champ. He's part of the triplets of Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin. That Cowboys team was one of the most dominating teams ever. What I loved most about Michael Irvin, though, is that he was never scared to cross over the middle. Unlike most receivers then and still now. Now, you can easily cross over the middle these days because you can't get hit like you used to. But the reason why most receivers would never cross over the middle in the 80s and the 90s and the 70s was because you would get lit the fuck up. And Michael Irvin gave zero fucks if he was going to get lit the fuck up. That dude would run across the middle, boom, catch the ball, get right up, do his little dance that he would always do, and first down. And oh, God, I loved Michael Irvin. I loved watching the triplets. I'm so fucking happy that I got to witness Michael Irvin, Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith, Charles Haley, Deion Sanders, Larry Allen. There's just so many great players from that 90s team. And so for me, Michael Irvin, there's so many reasons why he's number one of the 88 club. For the Dallas Cowboys, and it's those stats. It's that he was so consistent. It's that he gave a fuck. Now, like I said, Drew Pearson, he was the origin of this, and being an undrafted free agent and doing what he did was spectacular. But Michael Irvin, to me, is number one on the 88 club. Also, he is a Hall of Famer as well. He had to wait a couple years, but not half as long as Drew Pearson had to wait. But both of them are in the Hall of Fame. Dez Bryant, I don't know if his career is Hall of Fame worthy. C.D. Lamb, it's up for debate. Obviously, Antonio Bryant, nah, he's not. But that's my top five Dallas Cowboys 88 club. Like I said, I enjoyed the fuck out of Michael Irvin's career. I enjoyed the fuck out of Dez Bryant's career. I love seeing old highlights of Drew Pearson's career. I loved Antonio Bryant, and I'm looking forward to what we get from C.D. Lamb. I would love to see C.D. Lamb shoot up to number one. That's the dream right there. So, C.D., you do got a lot to live up to. I mean, Dez was phenomenal. I think he could easily pass Dez, especially if the Cowboys are able to get some playoff wins and have CD be the guy. Now, if CD starts winning Super Bowls and he's the reason why they win Super Bowls, then he definitely can elevate up to that top two, that top one. It's going to be tough, though, to beat out Drew Pearson and Michael Irvin, but I think he can... He could potentially take over that number three spot against Dez Bryant. But he's got a lot to live up to, and I think he can do it. I think he can. He hasn't been too bad this year. You know, this is the first year that CD's taken over as the number one guy. He hasn't done bad. He still has some work to do, I believe. Like I said, he's got to work on those drop passes. I'm sure he knows that, though. He seems like the type who doesn't overlook what he needs to work on. He's still young. Like I said, this is only his third year in the league. And who knows what's going to happen. They could have a good playoff run this year. And the reason why, maybe C.D. Lamb. But we'll see what we get from him. And I'm intrigued to see what happens. But that is my Trop 5 Dallas Cowboys 88 Club, because we are episode 88 of the show. So how crazy is that? So enjoy this full packed weekend of sports, and I will talk to you motherfuckers on Monday.